Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. As always, it's a pleasure to have you on board. We're going to talk about how soy can prolong your survival, especially if you have breast cancer. The School of Nutrition and Science, Tufts University. We're also going to look at how beating the blues with, well, berries from University of Reading in the United Kingdom. And magnesium deficiency promotes age-related diseases. I'll explain which of those diseases you're going to more likely have if you're deficient in this very important macronutrient. Also today, we're going to look at doing yoga just twice a week at home is very effective in reducing a major disease, Boston University School of Medicine. And if you're taking calcium-rich foods like soy protein and sea vegetables, bok choy and kale, you're going to protect yourself against bone loss. And that's from the Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging at Harvard Medical School. Also, paying attention to the perspective of others is the best way to understand them. Shanghai Tech University, as well as University of Chicago. And also today, a study shows a link between the microbiome, the very good bacteria in your intestine or bad bacteria in your intestine, and Parkinson's, University of Alabama, and more. Also today, short commentaries from Paul Craig Roberts, Professor Paul Craig Roberts, who worked inside of the establishment, not only was Undersecretary of Treasury under Reagan administration, but he also was an award-winning journalist and was with the Wall Street Journal. And he's going to talk about the resurrection of Armageddon under what's going on with Trump. And also from Gary Olson from Common Dreams, the deep state. Now, people have asked me many times, what exactly do you mean? Who are these people? Well, today I'll even go further. This is part of my ongoing series on the deep state. And from Chris Hedges, from Truth Dig, Donald Trump's greatest allies are the liberal elites. What does he mean? We'll explore that. And also today, I'm going to have some audio clips that I thought you would find of interest. One is, the media wants you to focus on Syria, but what is happening in the Middle East right now also involves Yemen. Why don't they want you focusing on Syria? You'll hear about it. And there's a huge natural gas leak devastating Alaska. Have you heard about it? No? Why not? We'll tell you about the gas leak, how serious it is, and why you haven't heard a thing about it. And in case you haven't learned how to get offended by everything yet, well, Mr. Sears will explain how that is possible. Because right now, there are places you cannot go. Because if you say anything at all, someone is going to find a reason to be offended and want to go hug a teddy bear while a psychologist hugs the teddy bear on them and a psychiatrist gives them medication and a school teacher goes over and wipes the forehead of the poor little snowflake and says, we're sorry. Well, we shouldn't be sorry. For all of you who get offended by everything, we intend to add some additional insights today. Also, I want you to hear from a person. His name is George Fathery. He's a Harvard-educated lawyer, works at one of the most prestigious law firms in America, and he got up to testify under oath about what happened when his kid was normal until he got the vaccines. So it's showing you that vaccine injury affects all people in all walks of life. So we'll hear his statements. So you see, we have a packed show, and we always want to begin with something that everybody can do anywhere in the world, and that's live a longer life. Soy, I'm talking about non-GMO, organic soy, is very healthy, providing it's used as just a part of an overall good diet, as it is in China, Japan, South Korea, And there it has allowed them to have less of the major diseases that we have in the United States. This is from the School of Nutrition Science at Tufts University. New research indicates that dietary soy products are safe and even beneficial for women diagnosed with breast cancer. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer, which is a very important journal from the American Cancer Society. And the findings may help resolve controversies over soy's potential link to breast cancer outcomes. Now, I remember it was about 10 years ago that there was a group of people running around the United States saying, don't use soy, it's harmful to your health. Nice to have you with us every day. Today is our new studio day. We spent the weekend moving our offices and studios to better facilitate getting our messages out. In the very near future, very near, we're going to have large screen monitors where people all over the world can call in, and you'll see them on Skype. We'll have people on TalkBack calling in on Skype. Plus, every time I go to an audio clip, now you just hear the audio. There you'll see the video as well as hear it. And so that's all happening this week and next week. Now, a few more things on health and healing. So now you know to take the blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, and pomegranate if you're in a blue mood, because the flavonoids impact our behavior. So there's a very good biological observation of what happens. The more berries you take in, the better your cognition and less depressed you are. And there's a reason for it. I won't go into the deep chemistry, but it has to do with circulating monoamines, and that involves an enzyme, monoamine oxidase, and being impacted by blueberries, anthocyanins. And so the more of these anthocyanins that you have, the less problems you're going to have with any of the monoamine oxidase factors. So blueberries for good mood. Now also, we need more magnesium in American diets because we're deficient. And when you're deficient, bad things happen. In fact, magnesium is simply the ultimate mineral in your body. I would rate it way above everything else as number one in importance. And this essential mineral is necessary for 300 different enzymes to function effectively. And it helps to regulate the flow of mineral ions in and out of cells in the skeleton, your heart muscle, your brain, and your nerve cells. Simply put, there is no system in the body to which magnesium is not vital. And among other functions, it converts food to energy. It helps to control your blood sugar. It plays a large role in the health of blood vessels and helps regulate your heart, brain, and heart function and heart rhythm. So you need magnesium, but we're not getting enough of it because of the diet we're eating. And if you want to prevent arrhythmias, if you want to improve cardiovascular health, if you want to reduce your risk of stroke, you have to have magnesium. And by the way, I've mentioned this before. Magnesium helps to prevent arrhythmias or irregular heartbeat, and while protecting your blood vessels against accumulations of calcium, thereby lowering the risk of atherosclerosis, it's a clear predictor of heart disease. So when I'm counseling someone and I see that they do not have enough magnesium in the diet, almost always I can ask, well, what's your heart like? Oh, I've got this problem with my heart and that problem with the heart. So make sure you're getting 1,000 milligrams, 500 in the morning, 500 in the evening, and always take magnesium. Always take magnesium. Let me repeat this. Always take magnesium before you exercise because it can prevent a heart attack. Very important. And always have with you, in a little case, 5 high heat cayenne pepper, 1,000 milligrams of Q10, 2,000 milligrams of magnesium citrate, in case you should have a heart attack or stroke. Because taking those within a minute of having a heart attack or stroke could save your life. So that's the latest on magnesium. Take your yoga. Boston University School of Medicine found that people who suffer from depression should participate in yoga and deep breathing classes twice a week and they could do it at home, and it makes an enormous difference in improving your depression. This was published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. And also, foods high in calcium protect against bone loss. And this was from Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging and Harvard Medical School, published in the Journal of Nutrition. I'm going to suggest 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. And it's best to always take the calcium when you take your omega-3 fatty acids, because it has a higher cellular bioavailability when it's taken with the omega-3 fatty acids. And I mentioned earlier in the program that we tend to believe that people, in effect, telegraph how they're feeling through facial expressions and body language. And we only need to watch them to know what they're experiencing. But new research shows we get much better idea if we put ourselves in their shoes instead. The findings are published in Psychological Science, the Journal of the American Association for Psychological Science. What do I mean? All of our perceptions help us define our truths. I've said it many times. Within this perspective, what is true works for the situation at hand, and it's what allows us to assess all of our experiences. When we realize that all truths are true, we no longer have a need to be right. So what happens when we consider the perspective of others? People expected that they could infer another's emotions by watching them, and when in fact they were more accurate when they were actually in the same situation as the other person. In other words, put yourself into another person's shoes. Then ask yourself, how does it feel being yelled at, condemned, ridiculed, belittled, accused, and in some way emotionally or physically violated? How does that feel? Doesn't feel good, does it? No, it doesn't. So why would you assume that it feels any better for the person who is receiving it for you who don't feel it because you're giving it? So you cannot always tell what someone is experiencing just by watching their reaction to you. Instead, stop for a moment. Just stop and say, before I say something and do something, what would it be like to be on the receiving end of this? And if it doesn't feel good, if it's not something that helps us, then don't do it. Now, so what do you do if you're frustrated, you're angry, you feel rightly so? Then go to neutral and simply say to the person, I'd like to share with you what you just said I find offensive. Could you understand why? Would you like to hear my perspective? At least you're allowing the person to engage in a conversation with you and to hear what you're feeling instead of simply reacting, saying, you're stupid or you're an idiot. Well, exactly how does calling someone an idiot help the situation? It doesn't. And then if you're in a position of power, almost always people in positions of power use their power to control the outcome to keep them in power. And we see this all the time. In fact, last night, I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes, but there was a good segment on there concerning the sinking of a tanker. And it was in 3-mile deep water, no survivors. It was 2 years ago when there was a hurricane off the Bermuda area. And everything went bad. Everyone was lost. No bodies had been recovered. They finally found the box where all the conversations were. Now, I didn't know. There were 6 microphones, R, in every one of these vessels in the bridge. So all communications on the bridge deck were recorded. So the people had a chance to hear the conversations, see what happened. You know, why did this 700-plus foot barge go down? Well, it turns out that the captain, knowing they were going into a hurricane, went down and took a long nap. 8 hours he was off the bridge. This is right when you're going in. Big mistake. The problem was that the second in command on deck said, we have to make a new course adjustment. And then another says we have to make even a more radical course adjustment, going east, getting out of the storm's way. And the captain came up and said no. And then other people who were in a line of authority all gave their input that they should go further out of the storm way. And the captain, you could hear him saying, oh, you know, the Alaska's seas are rougher than this, and, you know, we're fine and everything's fine. And then the storm hit and 30-foot waves, and the motor went out, the engine went out, didn't have the oil that could lubricate the whole thing, so it shut down. The engineer's frantic. Everyone's trying to get it started. And one of the people, a woman, texted her mom saying that it's over. Say goodbye to everyone. And the mother knew in that moment she was dying. Now, based upon the timeline that the people on the deck did not know when it would sink, but the logs finally showed, the time to do something was quickly passing. And right up until 10 minutes, 5 minutes before it actually sunk, that's when the captain says, you know, abandon ship. Well, fine. Exactly where are you supposed to abandon to? You're in the middle of a hurricane, 30-foot waves. You know, everyone who goes overboard is going to die. So from my perspective, and here's what I really found troubling. When asked, weren't there other people who wanted to give advice to do something? Yes. And had anyone paid attention and done it, they would all be alive. But he made it very clear, this official from the government, that in any chain of command, in any place, you always follow what the leader says. But what if the leader is wrong? Then everyone fails together. But what if in failing is you all die? So I thought about this, and it stuck in my mind all night. So I wrote something up, and I wanted to just share some insights with you. Look at all the major crises in our society today. I'm not just talking about things that cause people's lives. I can give you a lot of example of that. I could go clear back to 440, the British King Vortigern thought he had come up with a solution to the raiding of Picts and Scots. He outsourced the defense of Britain to the more warlike Saxons. Well, the Saxons came on board as mercenaries and realized there was no one there to fight them. They were the only real warriors in all of Britain, and they simply took over all of Britain. And tens of thousands of Saxons and their allies flooded into the helpless Britain over the next century. For 200 years, the British Isles were under Saxon control until the Normans, and it took the Normans a while to get over it, and they finally brought back control in 1066. There was also Ala Abdin Muhammad, the emperor of the great empire, the Qasarian empire, and he ordered the caravans traveling the Silk Road be raided, and the Mongols that he didn't like, kill them. So when Genghis Khan sent a delegation for peace, he sent 50 nobles, by the way, to protest the attacks and demanded restitution. The emperor said, I'm not negotiating with this barbarian. And so he set the beards of the ambassadors on fire, then beheaded it. Well, that didn't go well. Cause and effect. And 3 years later, 300,000 Mughal horsemen burst through the mountains and swept across the entire continent. And within 2 years, the empire was a watershed, and most of the population enslaved or killed. One person's bad choice. Now think of anything today where we invade a country, we don't want to communicate, we don't want to negotiate, we want to kill them, drone them. And then there's a negative feedback loop that comes back, blowback. Spain's Philip II created the Armada to drive the British from the canal, and so his army could invade, and he ordered the Armada to sail around the northern side of Britain and Ireland, And for an army on land, this would have been a good strategy, but the Duke failed to consider the stormy, rough seas of the North Atlantic. The vast majority of ships sunk, and Britain ruled the waves. Napoleon, 1812, he won against the Tsar, but then he had stayed too long. He didn't consider the elements, and he retreated with 680,000 soldiers that invaded Russia. On the retreat back during a brutal winter, he followed the same course, hence no food or shelter, because it had all been ravished earlier. Over half the men died. 100,000 were prisoners and 50,000 severely unfit for service because the Russians were used to fighting in the winter. He was not. Interesting, because after Napoleon came back into France, right behind him were all these Tsarist armies. And that was the end of Napoleon at that time. Then the Tsars end up, army and royals learned about Parisian life. They'd never been outside of Russia and took all that back with them. Even more recently, in 1854, the British, French, Turkish forces laid siege to Russia, the port of Sevastopol in the Crimea. And Russia army attacked the supply base, not the army, but supplies. Because how can an army fight without supplies? That was in Balaklava. And the Turkish soldiers abandoned their artillery, leaving it for the Russians. Then the Russian commander of the light cavalry, Lord Raglan, ordered the charge to stop Russians from taking the artillery and weapons. Not a good idea. That became the charge of the light brigade. 500-plus men rode up a valley, not one came out. In 1917, the Bolshevik leader, Vladimir Lenin, was stuck in Switzerland. He was a wanted man, by the way, in every other nation of Europe, including Tsarist Russia. And then the German army intelligence came up with a great idea, much like our CIA. Why don't we take Lenin, since we're at war with Russia, and a bunch of his comrades, and load him with a lot of money, put him in a sealed train, and let him finance a revolt from inside. I'm thinking the Mujahideen, which became Al-Qaeda, and also the Taliban. That really worked out well, didn't it? Well, it worked out pretty bad for the Germans, because they smuggled Lenin back into Russia. The Germans didn't expect him to really succeed, but he did, and the Bolsheviks eventually won without Germany's help. So just imagine, had the German intelligence never put Lenin on that train, today we may not have had communism, the Russian Revolution, Stalin, or the Cold War. And desperate to avoid another war with the trauma of World War I, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain and his French counterparts bowed time and time again to the extraordinary extortions of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. We saw the outcome of that. Now think of how many times when people do something wrong, I'm thinking of Israel, instead of saying, if you want peace, then you must show that you're not going to have the largest apartheid prison in the world, you've got to create a way of cooperating and living harmoniously with the people. And if you give people work, if you give them education, if you give them a reason for living, if you take off the pressure you're putting on everyday life, then you have the beginning of a possibility. But instead, we just kept financing them. The latest amount that Obama gave them was over $50 billion. Not the best thing to do. If they need a reason, look at other historical events. And months before the Germans invaded Russia in 1941, Soviet military intelligence reported their intentions, and the British sent a warning that they discovered the Nazi preparations for Operation, what was called, Barbarossa. And the top Russian spy in Japan reported details of the plan. Stalin stubbornly insisted it was all a British plot to involve him in the war. And even with over 2 million Weimar soldiers poised on his frontier, Stalin told his commanders to avoid provoking the Germans. Well, in the next 2 months, Millions of Russian soldiers and civilians paid for that mistake with their lives. And Truman signing on to the UN resolution making Israel an independent nation, and against all the advice from the Pentagon, intelligence, and State Departments to not sign. And French commander Henri Navarre's complete miscalculation of the Vietnamese general Nim and his peasant army, what he called them, a bunch of rice farmers wearing black pajamas. Well, those black pajama-wearing rice farmers at Dien Bien Phu, the garrison in 1954, beat the French that had been funded by our own government. And by the way, the initial Vietnamese declaration was modeled upon our own Declaration of Independence. They wanted peace with the United States, and we said no. We said no because we didn't want anything that showed that we were willing to compromise with people who had some sense of socialistic or even communistic values. That cost 3 million people their lives, including 58,000 Americans. But then there's nothing that matches the miscalculations in our modern life to the Bush-Cheney, Rumsfeld, New York Times invasion of Iraq. Quote, it will be a cakewalk, and quote, Iraqis will immediately welcome the U.S. military and democracy and freedom. Didn't work out that way. But you don't have to be in the military to make mistakes. The sinking of the Titanic. The captain put the speed up and completely ignored iceberg warnings. And Ford's Zessel cost $1.8 billion in flight-adjusted costs. What a mistake. Three Mile Island meltdown due to ignored equipment malfunction in the water cooling system. TEPCO and the government nuclear regulators ignored and suppressed warnings about Fukushima's aging facilities. And the Exxon Valdez crashing off the coast of Prince William Sound when Captain Hazelwood was seemingly drunk. And British Petroleum and Halliburton and Cameron, David Cameron, and screwing up on the Deepwater Horizon, and about a million other situations. I'm merely giving you these as just some very obvious examples of people both in positions of power in the military, where you're not allowed to challenge them, even when they're wrong, even though you should be allowed to, show me the person that does, and in corporate America. In fact, in all the corporate bailouts, when companies were going bankrupt, the people in control who made the mistakes that caused the bankruptcy got golden parachutes. Everyone else suffered. And that's how it is in every part of life. If you're a program director and you program what you personally like without looking first and doing your homework and being experienced, what does the public want? And people stop listening. You fire the hosts, but you never fire yourself. Mismanagement anywhere, in any company, in any organization, never holds itself responsible. When was the last time you had a bad teacher or a good teacher teaching a bad curriculum or a bad teacher teaching a bad curriculum hold themselves accountable? You don't. So you see, we just have a country right now where nobody wants to be held accountable for anything. And we wonder how we're supposed to turn it all around. Just something to think about. It motivated me after last night because it was a good piece, but boy, was the captain responsible. He and he alone was responsible for the loss of the ship and all the human lives, and yet they just couldn't say it. It's like, okay, a person screwed up, but we don't want to acknowledge it. Yeah, he caused death. Shame on him. But what about the people who are so terrified of being reprimanded by authority and staying in their place that even when they knew they were going to die or probably die, they wouldn't disobey rules? Now, that makes it far more personal. And that leads me to what I see, the complete destruction of ethics by the ruling class. And I'm not talking about a liberal ruling class or conservative ruling class, all ruling classes of which they all participate. And Let us look through the eyes of Chris Hedges. Because when you look at the liberal elites, from Hollywood and the Democratic Party to the New York Times and CNN and Anderson Cooper, a group that bears significant responsibility for the death of our democracy, they now hold themselves up as the saviors of the republic. They have embarked, despite their own corruption, in my opinion, and their own complicity in neoliberalism and the crimes of empire, on a self-righteous moral crusade to topple Donald Trump. It's quite a show. They attack Trump's lies, denounce executive orders such as his travel ban as un-American, and blame Trump's election on Russia or the FBI director, James Comey, rather than the failed neoliberal policies they themselves advance. Now, as an aside, on numerous occasions, I've given you very specific situations where all of those in power who claim to protect the interests of the working class, the unions, the poor, the minorities, and women are doing just the opposite. All of their policies have led to a massive increase in poverty, hunger, foreclosures, homelessness, malnutrition, imprisonment, debtors' prisons, the destruction of our environment. Not once do you see them caring enough to do anything except deny their personal responsibility, blame it on others. But it's an entire system that's at fault here. And we know that. And yet these are the people who every day step forth, just like with Russia. Show me the proof that they actually were the ones who hacked the Democratic offices and took documents, gave it to Wikipedia. I was watching to see how Fox was going to handle this, and all their talking heads are all neocons. Woodward and Laura Ingraham, every one of the people on Fox seems to have this gene that says the only way we can show that we are a value of a nation is to be warlike. We will not be intemperate. We will go everywhere we can, and we will carry a big nuclear stick. We will put boots on the ground, and we will kill you. That's the only message I hear coming out of the fascistic Fox talking box. But it's no better at MSNBC. All the media are part of the neocon and orthodox deep state, or they're extremely limited in understanding world events and cause and effect. And so they say, what's Russia? Well, okay, prove to me it's Russia. Show me the evidence. Julian Assange said repeatedly he did not receive any information nor meet with anyone in the Russian government. Those documents did not come from Russia. I believe him. I do not believe any of the talking heads. And by the way, there was a person who's on the Senate Intelligence Committee who last evening said that he has seen no evidence of Russia's complicity in undermining our election. So he's on the committee that's actually getting the information from the FBI and the CIA and the intelligence agencies. And if he doesn't see any, then where is it? Well, it's part of the game that's played. So what we have today, where was this moral outrage when our privacy was taken away from us by the security and surveillance state? The criminals on Wall Street were bailed out. We were stripped of our civil liberties, and 2.3 million men and women were packed into our prisons, most of them poor people of color. Why did they not thunder with indignation as money replaced the vote and elected officials and corporate lobbyists instituted our system of legalized bribery? Where were the impassioned critiques of the absurd idea of allowing a nation to be governed by the dictates of corporations and banks and hedge fund managers? Why did they cater to the foibles and utterings of fellow elites, all the while blacklisting critics of the corporate state and ignoring the misery of the poor and the working class? Where was their moral righteousness when the United States committed war crimes in the Middle East and our militarized police carried out murderous rampages? What the liberal elites do do now is not moral. It is self-exaltation disguised as piety. It is part of the criminal carnival act. The liberal class refuses to acknowledge that it sold the Democratic Party to corporate bidders, collaborated with the evisceration of our civil liberties, helped destroy programs such as welfare, orchestrate the job-killing North American Free Trade Agreement and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Deal, wage endless war, debase our public institutions, including the press, and build the world's largest prison system. The New York Times, I'm sure you've seen it, is running a little ad, and it says, the truth is hard to find, the truth is hard to know, the truth is more important than ever. That reads the television ad for the New York Times. What the paper fails to add is that the hardest place to find the truth about the forces affecting the life of the average American and the truth about empire is the New York Times itself. News organizations from the Times to the tawdry forms of entertainment masquerading as news on television have rendered most people and their concerns invisible. Liberal institutions, especially the press, function, as the journalist and author Matt DeBeebe says, as the guardians of the neoliberal and imperial orthodoxy. It is the job of the guardians of orthodoxy to plaster over the brutal reality and cruelty of neoliberalism and empire with a civility of entertainment. They pay homage to a non-existent democracy and non-existent American virtues. The elites who live in enclaves of privilege in cities such as New York and Washington, San Francisco, scold an enraged population. They tell those they dismiss as inferiors to calm down, be reasonable and patient, and trust in the goodness of the old ruling class and the American system. African Americans have heard this kind of cant preached by the white ruling class for a couple of centuries. And because the system works for the elites, and because the elites interact only with other elites, they are mystified about the revolt rising up from the decaying cities they fly over in the middle of the country. They think they can stuff this inexplicable rage back in the box. They continue to offer up absurd solutions to deindustrialize and despair, such as Thomas Friedman's endorsement of a culture of entrepreneurship and the ethics of pluralism. These kinds of bromides are advertising jingles. They bear no more connection to reality than Trump promising to make America great again. And so we should think on this for a moment, just a moment, and then go back to what I said. When someone in power makes a bad choice, when your doctor tells you what to do, do you question it? Do you see the reasonable in us? Or do you see it's just you are just one in a long assembly line? It doesn't matter what you and your specific needs are. You're going to get the same kind of care that everyone else on that assembly line gets. You're going to get over-medicated, over-diagnosed, over-treated, and not always over-healed. So as I saw that piece last night on 60 Minutes, I thought our entire society, from the pulpits to the synagogues to the mosques, most religions are religions of hate. Most religions, I can show you, I have, paragraph after paragraph, how by following the exact dictates, you could end up being a horrific murderer. I all can show you in the same text statements of love. So are they warlike or are they godlike? Are they peaceful? What are they? Well, you can find whatever you want. It depends upon the leader you're listening to. But what if the leader is no different than the captain of that boat that decided to take a nap instead of being on board and decided not to listen to everyone else's advice but to keep the course, and everyone died? Remember, you had 50 million good Christian Germans who thought they were good and Christian, and look what they caused. And then look at the others who've made mistakes on Wall Street. Did anyone who made disastrous Wall Street mistakes, from the Federal Reserve allowing it to happen, like Ben Bernanke later, and even Yeltsin nearer, Alan Greenspan before, did any of them say, I should never again be employed because my advice was fatal? No. And how about the titans of Wall Street? No. just those who are not policymakers or opinion leaders, those are the ones who are always the first to sacrifice. So look at the military. Look at its posturing and look at NATO, a completely criminal organization. And look at the balkanization of Yugoslavia. Look at the total destruction of Libya and Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia. Look at what we do. Look at who we are. Look at the gluttony. Look at the obesity. Look at the drunkenness. Look at the self-absorbed narcissism of completely lost, denial-related, out-of-touch younger generation. Look at those who don't care. Look at the apathy. Look at the emotions of people who look around, don't know who to follow, what to do, and simply give up trying or caring. And that's about 90% of every institution and every person on this continent. It leaves about 10%, or about almost 35 million people, who at least are not going to walk off a cliff because Jim Jones or their leader said it's a good idea, or vote this way because it's a good idea. Thank goodness we do have some people who understand what it is to be responsible. Do not read the New York Times and believe what you read unless you have independent verification. And hence, I don't read the New York Times nor the Washington Post. I can't stand to watch these morons on CNN who act like they know what they're talking about. I'm looking at a nation of functional illiterates. I look at people who go out to demonstrate, and they support the demonstrations that break into buildings and destroy things. Do you really think that we're all going to say, oh, thank God you caused destruction and you beat up on people? I'm moved and motivated to want to hear what you have to say and follow your advice. No, we're in a mess right now. We're in a mess at every level. And unfortunately, those who are wise enough to see the mess we're in will be the ones who will not be listened to, because they do not come with the self-righteous indignation wanting to make sure that the other, those they oppose, are destroyed. So I predict that Donald Trump will not make it through his presidency. I've done this quite a few times, and I will continue to say that, but I also believe that sooner or later, those who feel so righteous in defending the merits of a democracy through the Trumps or through the Clintons or the Obamas, or their notion of democracy, one day you're going to open the door and you're going to be met with 65 million people who disagree with you. I hope you're ready for that day, because it will come sooner or later. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go over and take a look at our audio file today. And I want to talk about, or hear, have you hear about, why we're not paying attention to America. That means all of our generals, our admirals, our Secretary of Defense, all of the people who are complicit. It's like having 30,000 people in power all on that barge and all agreeing that if the commander-in-chief says we go into the hurricane, we got to go into the hurricane. And these are the generals who are saying, we got to go into Yemen, we got to fight these people. Do you know who you're fighting? You're fighting children and women, the poorest nation in the Middle East. You're fighting people who do not have planes and submarines and nuclear. They don't have anything. And yet they still haven't been defeated after 2 years by the Saudi Arabians. You're supporting terrorists, the Saudi Arabians, and the Wahhabism, the most brutal, vile, disgusting form of religious belief is Wahhabism. These are the people that decapitate people, that beat women, that subjugate them. Those are the people you're supporting. So who's got the courage to say this is all stupid and wrong, wrongheaded? No one. No one. Listen in.
The world is up in arms over Syria. Aleppo, airstrikes, Assad, nonstop media coverage. A tremendous humanitarian crisis. Possibly the worst in the Middle East? Nope, that's Yemen. 19 million people are in need of some kind of humanitarian assistance there. That's around 70% of the population. Why doesn't the media cover this? Surely it's an important story. Yemen is a battlefield for influence between two regional superpowers, Saudi Arabia and Iran. Iran backs Houthi rebels, and they booted the Saudi lapdogs out of power. So in March 2015, the Saudi-led coalition started attacking Yemen and imposed a naval blockade to bomb the Houthis. More than 8,000 airstrikes have been carried out since then. Over 10,000 people killed. Around half of them were civilians, the majority of whom were killed by Saudi airstrikes, according to the UN. And yes, bombing civilians is a war crime, but we don't hear much about that either. All of this bombing would never be possible without the Saudis' good old buddy, America, which supplied Saudi Arabia with cluster bombs and other bombs and still helps them refuel their fighter jets, plus provides intelligence for the kingdom. This is not to mention that Yemen, which has to import 90% of its food, fuel, and medical supplies, is currently on the brink of famine due to a Saudi port blockade. So why do we only hear about Syria?
So it's something to think about. And I think we should understand that what we're doing in the United States, our taxpayer dollars are going to fund a military-industrial complex, an overreached imperial ideology that is causing millions of people to suffer. Now, if we were to see every night on every hour a PSA of those kids who have no food, who have no clean water, and who are dying at a high rate because of our support of a disastrous militarized campaign by an absolute lunatic running Saudi Arabia. But he buys a lot from us. And so the value of human life is based upon who's paying the most to us. And that's unfortunate. But it's what is. Hardest lesson to learn is the lesson that does not lie to you. I'm Gary Nall. Just a final comment here. We are coming up to a health retreat that we're doing on behalf of WBAI. BAI is trying to stay alive. We recently got a bequeathment of, I think, $86,000, and that was substantially because of the friendship of our program coordinator with the person who was doing the bequeathing. He wanted to make sure that the money be properly used, and Tony convinced the foundation that it would be. I know that there is a great effort to see that all the outstanding premiums are mailed. I know that the premiums are being mailed in a timely way. And the good news is that over 2,000 premiums, I was told, have been shipped because of our efforts at a retreat. And Tony will be at the new retreat. We believe that we can get about 1,000 premiums shipped out prior to the retreat coming up first week of April. I think it's almost filled. So we're going to have a second week. And at the retreat, people get a chance to be with nature, pure, undiluted, unadulterated, quiet, beautiful environment, meditation classes, counseling, cooking classes, sprouting classes, fermented food classes this time, never done that before, pottery classes, never done that before. No, did that once back in 1990 at the when we had a pottery wheel in our Arts and Crafts Center, but we bring in one of the great artists in America from the Old West and the Georgia O'Keeffe model to do all kinds of arts and crafts for people they can take home with them. Personal health counseling, my lectures at night on issues that are important to our life, homesteading classes, juicing, gourmet vegan meals. We're going to have meditation classes in just one of the most beautiful environments on the planet. And with mineral water that you can do wonderful water aerobics, a state-of-the-art gym, and just do as little or as much as you want. It's a chance for a lot of people to start over, to rejuvenate, to detoxify, juicing all day long, all the juices you could possibly ever want. It's a very special week. And it's a lot of effort, and I'm happy to contribute my energy to help the station survive. And it does, because the money doesn't go to pay the rent or the lights. It goes for premiums. And historically, that hasn't been the case where the premiums were the first priority of bills to be paid. Unfortunately, when you got to reduce listenership of the station and reduce income, you pay whatever bills you can. But the audience didn't always get up there on the priority list. Now they are. I'm very happy about that. So we're getting premiums out. The retreat is paying for them. It's great for the station. It doesn't cost them anything. And I'm happy to be able to help along with a lot of other people. So if you would like to join me for an upcoming retreat that could help start your life over, change your life, relax you, detoxify you, rejuvenate you, energize you, and let you see what I believe the future is and the best places to live, the best place to locate, and a lot of things I won't have a chance to talk about on the air, there I can go into in great depth. In one of those beautiful flower gardens and rose gardens and Socrates gardens, this is a really cool place. Then you'll call this number, speak with Luann, and she will see whether or not this is right for you. Call 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And that's for, I don't know if there's any space left in the first week of April, but this will be my last time on the air at noon talking about it. And I've been told by the station manager that he would like to have a conversation with me, which we have not had, about the future of my program. I'm now only on one day a week. So the future may be no days a week, or it may be a return. I don't know. That's what he will tell me. And whatever I'm told, then I'll pass it on to you as soon as that meeting occurs. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.